Welcome one and all once again to Dual Roads in episode 116. We continue our very fascinating post E3 all, where there's really nothing of note happening in the gaming industry. But we will find stuff to talk about as always. But before we get there, let's introduce our panel. This week we have Martin.
Hello.
And we have Phil.
Hey, how's it going? I usually have something to say after you say my name, but I got nothing this week.
So you said something by not saying anything.
Yeah.
There you go. So yeah, like I said, it's been a really quiet week for news. It's been a really quiet 3 weeks for news. It makes sense. Two of the big companies are gearing up for their system launches at the end of this year. And one of them, I assume, has to figure out they have a system on the market at some point soon. But neither here nor there. But Martin, since you weren't here, I ask if you want to kick us off with what you've been playing recently.
Yeah, I played a couple of things I think you guys probably haven't talked about. The first game is Scrolls by Mojang, the guys behind Minecraft.
Oh my god, I heard about that a long time ago. I did not know that was out or anything like that. It's great. I'm interested.
Well, it's kind of out. You can buy into the beta phase of it.
Okay.
Later on, the full version, just as Minecraft, will cost more money, but right now you can get into the game for cheaper, but it's still in beta. It works, but right out of gate, I want to say, even though it's a beta, I have basically zero issues with it. It's not very buggy or anything. I think mostly it will be content. So, about the game. Scrolls is basically a mixture of a collectible card game and a round-based strategy game, I would say. So, at this point, there are three factions with different cards in them. One is energy, one is growth. One is order, and all of them have different play styles. And in typical collectible card games fashion, you collect different cards, build your own deck, and then try to execute on your strategy that you've built up with your deck. So that's not exactly new, but it works very well. The decks so far are well built out, and they are adding new cards every 1 or 2 weeks at this point, it seems. So that's very good. And the other part is, you are just not playing your cards on the board, and it's just, okay, who does damage to the other guy? No. It all happens on a hex-based board with two sides. And at the end of both sides are these totems, which have 10 hit points. There are 5 totems, one for every row, and they have every one of them has 10 hit points. The goal is to destroy at least 3 totems from your enemy. And in front, in between are these fields, these hex fields. So if you now play creature, you have to put it on one of these hex fields. And the hex fields are important in the sense that it determines in which row you attack, it determines in which order your units attack. I play, for example, energy. There are also catapult units. That means that these units actually attack an area of effect on the other side. So it mixes. I don't know if any of you have played Heroes of Might and Magic, but it kind of feels like the battles of Heroes of Might and Magic combined with collectible card games. And that's kind of unique and actually really fun. And what I also like is that they are not trying to nickel and dime you for anything, because you can buy new cards in-game, in packs, but these packs cannot be bought with real money. It's all just play money, so you have to spend no money after the initial investment, and that's also pretty great, I think, because it would have been pretty easy for them to go the free-to-play route and nickel and dime you for every new card, but they are not doing that, and that's something that's commendable. The game right now runs on PC and Mac, I think Linux is coming later. And they're also thinking about a tablet version, I think. That would be also pretty great to have on the go.
Okay. What else have you?
Oh, okay. The other game I played a lot of is Rogue Legacy.
Oh, man. I'm definitely going to get into that this week. I bought it, the other day. I'm going to get into that.
Yeah, awesome. It's really good. Last year already my Game of the Year list was kind of filled with rogue games. And, like the name says, it's a rogue game, but they're calling it not a rogue-like, but a rogue-lite. In the sense that it mixes concepts of the rogue games with basically Castlevania. You have your hero. You have to beat the evil king, and you go into the castle, and you have to beat a couple of bosses. It's four to unlock the final door to lead you to the final boss. That's easier than it sounds, because the enemies are really hard at the beginning, of course, and the castle is always randomly generated, and if you die, you're permanently dead. The good thing, though, is because it's a roguelite, you keep your gold, and that gold then gets transferred to your heir, and that heir can try to build out the castle, which can give you different benefits, like more health points, or you can carry more armor, or you can unlock different classes for your possible future heirs. And you can also use the gold to buy new equipment, which gets inherited by your heirs. Or you can buy, I think it's called runes, which gives you special abilities, like you get more gold per kill, or you can have a double jump, or you can put...
Wait, you have to buy a double jump?
Yeah. And the great thing is, though, because it's rune-based, and every rune is assigned to one of your equipment items, you can basically have double jump rune if you really want to in every one of your equipment items, so you could theoretically have, like, five jumps, I think? Wait, let me think about it. A helmet, chest armor, boots, yeah. Five jumps in a row is what you could theoretically have. If you want to skill that way. It's all up to you.
That's like the other Steam game that came out recently, Bleed, that has like unlimited jumps. Yeah.
That sounds ridiculous. I'm basically just using double jump because for me, I think I'm trying to amass a bunch of gold, so I'm basically using a bunch of gold runes, because at this point I'm kind of having trouble with second boss, and I'm trying to maybe get my magic damage up so he gets easier, hopefully. And yeah, the thing is, I like this generational concept, because every time you have to pick one of three heirs, possible heirs, basically, and they have different... they can be a different class, like, for example, you can be a paladin, which has kind of a lot of health and can also use a shield to deflect stuff, or you can be a barbarian, which has who has a lot of health, but basically no magic and no magic damage, or you can play an archmage, who, of course, has basically no hit points, but lots of magic damage and lots of magic points. And later on you also unlock miners who get more money and can have a headlight to see in the dark. And the other funny thing is that your heirs also get traits, and some of these traits can be great, and some of these traits can be kind of bad, and some of these traits can just be funny. So,
what's a bad trait?
A bad trait for
being upside down?
Yeah. Vertigo. That's called Vertigo. Then the whole game is upside down. That's kind of hard to play. So you walk on the ceiling. And that's hard. Another bad trait would be two left hands. Then all your magic stuff for example, if you have daggers to shoot out to the front, if you have two left friends, these daggers get shoot out to the back. So if you want to shoot in a different direction, you have to face to the back with your to the enemy and then try to hit them that way.
How long until we see people doing, like, difficult runs with bad traits? Like, all upside down playthroughs.
Probably soon. Then there can be just funny games. One of them is irritable bowel syndrome. So sometimes when you jump, you just fart.
Now, is there a gay fate I mentioned that, or is it just...
You just fart when you jump.
Okay.
Or another thing is you're colorblind, so the whole game is black and white.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Or you're nostalgic when the game is in sepia tones.
I thought it would be pixelated if it was nostalgic. Wait, the game is pixelated anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So never mind. Yeah.
And then there are some traits that can be good or bad, depending on the castle you're in. For example, there is a trait that's a dwarfism. So you can be a dwarf, which... actually, dwarfism is kind of good, because it allows you to dodge under stuff that probably otherwise would hit you, and you can get into secret passages in some of the castles. And there's also, of course, the other version of it is that you are a giant, and then it's way easier to get hit. I think that gives you more hit points, so it kind of balances out that way. So yeah, it's really a funny game and a lot of fun. And the most important thing for a game like this is because it's Castlevania-ish and you have a lot of jumping to do and fight difficult enemies is that the controls are just spot on, very snappy, and it just feels right. You can get through some very complicated stuff because some enemies are really hard enough. Complex attack patterns, which just requires these controls to work well, and they do. So, yeah, that's a game I can only really recommend.
I really like the concept of it. Yeah.
So far, it's only for the PC, but the Mac and Linux version are coming. I don't know if they're planning to do any console versions, though. I don't think so, at least not at this point. But who knows?
I mean, every console is going to miss out on fart and jumps. Well, except for Nintendo. I think Wario has them covered.
Yeah.
Right. I'm just saying, who knows, but maybe if they do well enough with the game, I mean, with some of the consoles allowing self-publishing, the Wii U allows it, the PS4 allows it, maybe they will think about console versions as well. But at this point, PC, later on, Mac and Linux.
Okay. Sounds like a very trippy game.
Yeah. But fun.
Trippy doesn't mean a bad thing. anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay.
I've been playing some Crusader Kings. I told you earlier, but that's not really a new game.
Yeah, you've been playing it so much that you're watching it on YouTube even.
Mm.
What about you, Phil? Anything exciting?
Yeah, so last night I played through 400 Days, the DLC for The Walking Dead Season 1, and this DLC is supposed to bridge the gap between Season 1 and Season 2, and kind of, like, set up the premise for Season 2. First of all, I won't spoil anything, so no worries to anybody listening. It's a good game, but so the whole thing about The Walking Dead is how, like, amazing the dialogue choices are, and how it gives you the illusion of choice, but it's not choice in the Mass Effect style of here's good and bad or the middle. It is like, here, pick all these shitty choices and what the choices affect are the relationships with their characters, but the story is going to be ultimately the same. And that's why The Walking Dead kind of excels over the other games that require choice. So for this game, it is not really on par with The Walking Dead. It's good, but it's not on par with Season 1. Like, the writing seems kind of spotty at points. They're very questionable. The choices are a lot more binary in this, which is weird because The Walking Dead is known for the choices not being binary, but it is very strongly leading you to a point. And The Walking Dead did that too, but it didn't do that in such an obvious way. And then there are, like, points like, it didn't happen to me, but I was looking online, to see other people's thoughts. But, like, there's this one spot where you need to make a decision and somebody's coming after you, and you have to hit them. But if you don't hit them, you get a game over. But if you do hit them, it's like, it makes sense in context, but, like, if you do hit them, something else bad happens to you, but it makes no sense that you would get a game over if you didn't hit them. And it's like things like that that's really weird about it, because The Walking Dead, the first season, had it very covered. But other than that, like, it's pretty good. Like, some episodes are better than the others, but it makes me very excited for season two, because of what's going on by the end of that episode. So
yeah. Let me ask you something. Does it take into account anything that happened in season one? So does any of that carry over into this? Because I don't think I've saved game of it.
Apparently it does. It gives you that notification right up front. It's like, hey, either we're going to take your save data, or do you want us to generate data for you from the first season?
Okay.
But in the actual game, I didn't see any hints. There's this one offline in one of the episodes where they reference something from season one, but that's about it.
So how does it bridge the gap then? Or is it just like an introduction to people you meet in season two? Okay.
So it sets up a premise that I imagine is going to be the whole thing about season two. Like, again, I can't say it, but by the end of it, it sets something up that's big.
So it's more of a prologue than a gap.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
But as far as I know, they have not said if any of these characters will be playable in season two.
Right. They'll probably be in it, but yeah, I don't know if they'll be playable at all.
Okay, this is going to be minor spoilers, I assume, but is there any gunplay in this DLC?
Yes. There's like 5 seconds of gunplay, yeah.
Okay, because that was the best part of the original Walking Dead.
Well, yeah. No, the gunplay is easy, though. It's just like point at the guy and push down whatever your down button is on the system that you're playing. And yeah, that's it. It's easy.
Easy peasy, fresh and squeezy.
Yeah.
So since this DLC, would you say it's okay to get?
Yeah, it's $4, so yeah, it's definitely worth the money. It's a very good piece of... It's not as good as The Walking Dead, and I also feel that The Last of Us set a new bar for post-apocalyptic storytelling, and The Walking Dead is really going to have to step the game up for season two, because it's not on par with The Last of Us, and DLC isn't even on par with the first season, but it is still a great piece of game, a great piece of story. Some really, really messed up things happen in it, some really tough choices. But it's $4, and it's worth $4, definitely.
Yeah, I was about to say, I mean, and this is, you know, really not a fair comparison. The Last of Us has a much bigger budget and is a much different type of game than The Walking Dead's trying to be, or can be.
Yeah, but like,
$4
all writers are writers.
That kind of
like,
sucks.
You know?
Well, I mean,
you have Gary Whitta on The Walking Dead, who is a Hollywood writer. Like, writers don't require budget, per se.
He wrote After Earth. I mean, it's...
And the Book of Eli.
So, yeah, it's not say, you know, not everything you write is going to be a hit.
Yeah.
As they say.
But
let's just say that there are two other people on After Earth that have writing credits. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Wait. Does Will Smith's son have a writing credit?
No. Will Smith has writing credit.
Okay, but not his son.
And what's his name? Shia Mala something.
Shia LaBeouf?
Oh, no. You're talking about M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah,
oh,
M. Night Shyamalan.
Right,
he's also writing credit.
Right.
They're hiding him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was just confused that you said it's $4 because they want €5 from us over here. That
oh,
sucks.
Really?
Yeah.
It was 400 Microsoft. I bought it for Xbox 360. It was 400 Microsoft points for me. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was just looking at Steam.
Oh, okay. Go on.
Oh, I was going to say anything else.
Yeah, so I finally, you talked about Super Luigi U last podcast, and I finally got into it. So now I've done 6 worlds, all star coins, all secret exits so far. So, yeah, I love it. It is very fun. I like, it is very strongly a more of a single player experience than the original game is, because of the short time limit and how kind of tough the levels are. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, I played all of New Super Mario Bros. U with a buddy, and same thing with the Wii, but I couldn't imagine playing Super Luigi U with friends. It's a very precise, like, I need to do this sort of game in comparison.
It's a bonding experience. I play a bit more of it, especially being that my 360 bit the dust this week again.
Oh, what happened?
I bought Borderlands 2 during the big Xbox sale this week. I went to start it up, and I got those wonderful 3 red rings, so...
Is that your first red ring?
No, this is my... it's either my 4th or 5th one.
Is it? Holy crap!
Yeah, I know, it's really sad, because people... I mentioned this on Twitter, and people are like, is this your first one? Like, how old is this? And I'm like, the fact that this become common, that it's asking how old your system is, and they, oh, that's pretty good for... I'm like, yeah, that doesn't excuse the fact that this thing breaks down like nobody's business randomly.
Do you have a new model, like the Slim?
No, I have one. Mine is ancient. It's from 07? No, 06.
Like, okay, hold on a second. So, like, when my 360 first red ringed in 2011, which was the old model, the Slim had already come out, so I just got a Slim, and I assume the Slim doesn't red ring. But you've had 4 or 5 red rings all in the old model, like, before the new model came out.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Wow.
I can't believe you stuck with such a console.
Yeah. Well,
I would be so frustrated after the second one that I would not buy another one.
Oh, here's the story, and we don't have enough news to talk about. Honest to God, I got my 360 Christmas 2006, hook it up, and it red rings on me. First console.
That's what happened with my Wii, actually. When I first got my Wii in 2006, it was busted, and I had to send it back to Nintendo, and they sent me a new one.
I sent it back to Toys R Us because, like, it would red ring, but it would work at some time, so I just sent it back and exchanged it. And then it was fine for a bit. And then I think the next summer was the Halo 3 beta, and I got the Halo 3 beta. I played it for a couple of days. It red rings on me again. If you've ever worked with Microsoft, their customer relation, it takes about a month and a half for you to send your system and get it back.
Oh,
so
cool.
Huh?
You know what was easy?
The way they replace stuff at Microsoft is absolutely awful. I had the controller that broke down. I just had one controller, and just replacing a controller that it was obviously broken would also take over a month. What the fuck?
Yeah. You know what was an easy process? Fixing my PS3 when it broke, and I just called Sony, and they sent me a box. I sent it to them, and it got back to me within, like, I don't know, a week and a half, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, my PlayStation 3 was out of warranty when it broke down, and it was going to cost me $150 to repair.
Oh, yeah. Mine is out of warranty a long time ago. I had to pay $129, I believe. Oh.
This is one of those things that I'm not proud of, but I did the hip dryer trick with the PlayStation 3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard about that, yeah.
I did it so it worked long enough for me to trade it in after they did, like, rigorous tests on it. And then everybody I used, I just told them I'm upgrading to a Sim, and I got the Sim for, like, $20.
Oh,
dude,
my God.
Dude,
terrible
I'm actually
person.
Worse
That's
than
awesome.
You. I did the same trick and then sold mine on eBay.
Oh. I didn't feel so bad selling it to a store because they have a warranty, so if somebody bought it and it broke down, they could return it and get another one anyhow.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of my things. But yeah, this is, like, so...
You know what? The eBay thing is even worse than that, because...
Because you're selling it to a person.
Yeah.
I know!
But yeah, I went back and forth this week about fixing my 360, and in the end, I decided I'm going to fix it anyhow. Part of the reason I stuck with the 360 and part of the reason Microsoft has had such a great generation is honestly the Xbox Live factor. Even though I'm paying $50 to $60 a game with my friends, gaming with my friends is still a huge part of what I do. And especially being that they don't really have as many systems. Well, I mean, they do, but, you know, everybody, you know, I have a Wii, I have a PS3, I have a Wii U. Some of my friends have, like, a Wii U, I have a Wii, some of them have a PS3. And stuff like that, so I'm just going to fix it. There's a place in the city that charges $65. I mean, it's just going to buy me a few months, but I imagine that's probably all I'm going to need. Like, in the long run, I'm not missing out on anything if I don't fix it. I just kind of, you know, I just bought Borderlands 2 to play with my friends. We're still playing through Dead Island, and the Ninja Turtles game, which is honestly the only reason I'm thinking about it is because I do want to play that with them. Yeah. And I said this last week, this is one of the reasons beyond the, you know, beyond some of the DRM stuff that they announced and then reneged on, that I don't have any interest in buying a Microsoft product anytime near launch. Right. It's because they haven't shown me, like, this is, you know, this is a problem the entire generation for them, that their system will faulty. And it's a reputation that still kind of hangs over their heads. And I don't think they've ever really come out and said anything other than, we realize the problem, we'll fix it. So,
Like, for me, the PS3 is the console that all of my friends have. I don't know how that worked out, but it just turned out that everybody, like, that I know in my town, got a PS3 and not a 360. So that's the one that I game online with.
I think it's the same for me, but I also live in Europe, so it's much more likely that people have a PS3 that's an Xbox.
I also think it depends, because, like, when I got my 360, I guess it was back in 06, and at that time you had Gears of War, which is a big thing.
Yeah.
Participation in Halo 3, Dead Rising, Bioshock, there was a bunch of major games. So I think, I mean, for part of this generation, I think Microsoft was the system to get the...
No, like, I think the 360 is, one of the best consoles this generation, because it out of all the three consoles, I'm talking about the Wii, PS3, and Microsoft. It delivered on most of the promises that they promised us. And it was the most, even to this day, that original Xbox and, like, even the original interface holds up, like, so well. And, I think the 360 is great. But it just turns out my friends had, you know, PS3, so I played a lot more games on that. But Gears of War, oh, dude, amazing.
Yeah. And there was a point whenever my friends asked which they should get, I would always say, you know, go with the 360. And then around, I guess, say 2009, 2010, like, Microsoft just stopped caring. Like, you know, they didn't go after stuff like Mass Effect and Lost Planet and Dead Rising and all that other stuff. And, yeah, Sony just kind of took over because, you know, say what you will about what you think of all their games, Sony has always been consistent with trying new things and releasing a ton of games.
Yeah, they have a lot of great first-party stuff. They had a rocky start, but they came back strong in the past few years. But, yeah, the 360, for a while there, like, it had Japanese RPGs. That was, like, the console to get JRPGs, and then it had Gears of War. It had all this crazy stuff. Like, it had a great, great period there.
Yeah, and it's weird. I mean, granted, we don't know their full lineup, and there's nothing else to talk about this week, really. Is that it doesn't seem like they have that same hunger going into this generation.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be that maybe they'll wait to later on in the year when they have Tokyo Game Show and Gamescom, but, like, right now, it just seems like, okay, we have the Americans, we're going to focus on the Americans. And that seems their MO, because a lot of the features that they announce, it seems very American-centric. I don't even know, I wouldn't even say Canadian, like North America, I just feel it's very American, it's very USA.
Yeah.
And a lot of their games are just kind of those things that kind of appeal to the West, more shooters, more gritty, cinematic-type deals. And I'm like, you know, this isn't the same Microsoft. I mean, granted, even Dead Rising, like, the stuff came out that said Dead Rising is kind of, Dead Rising is more like, it's taking inspirations from Call of Duty. And it's like, yeah, you got this very interesting franchise that you're just trying to assimilate to be like everything else. And it's really, they act that hunger, that urgency that they had coming into this generation, where they knew that Sony, that they had to be aggressive for Sony. Now that Sony has to be nipping at their heels, they're like, you know, whatever. People will come.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I guess, you know, since we're already talking about the Xbox and Microsoft, we might as well talk about what the big piece of news this week was.
Well, actually, before that happens, I cut you off. You're in the middle of a thought talking about Super Luigi U before I asked about the 360. I don't know what you're going to pick.
I was going to say, and I think I said this last week, and I still hold up, is that I think new Super Luigi U works as DLC. I think it's a fun expansion pack. It does offer the challenge. But I do think that overall, I think new Super Mario Bros. U is still a much better made game. It's more, you know, Luigi sacrifices a lot to kind of get that challenge, that speedrun going, where Mario has the ability to have much more creative level designs and a lot more, you know, it has a lot more room to breathe with exploration and stuff like that. New Super Luigi U doesn't really offer that as much because you are always kind of racing against the calculator.
You know,
how much is the DLC, by the way?
$20.
I guess that's alright. It's about the same level. Isn't it the same level count as the original game?
Same 82 levels, boss battles.
It's shorter levels, but.
Yeah,
that sounds absolutely fine for the price point.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised Nintendo got it well the first time around on their console. But yeah, it's a great DLC package, and they've been doing it well with the whole retail thing where it comes out 2 months later for $30. I mean, people always say that digital should be cheaper. Here you go. Mm-hmm. And yet you still find people complaining that it's not the same price.
Actually, maybe they should have gone with also have like a Game of the Year thing going where you get both.
That's true. Maybe they will.
They might still have it. If anything, I see them bundling a new Super Luigi U with the Wii U eventually.
Yeah.
This way you can still kind of get a Mario game, but you don't get the Mario game that cost them more to make.
Yeah,
and that's why I like
that's
the
not
Super
the best
Luigi
game to bundle because it's way harder.
I mean, they do make some compensations for that. Like, Nabbit is a character that's kind of introduced for kids because he can't die unless, you know, you fall into a pit or lava, but, you know, he doesn't take any damage. So it's kind of a balance in that. But yeah, I also think it's part of their strategy. I think one of the reasons they also go on retail with this is because they can, you know, like, they've pretty much given up to the first half of the Wii's this year. The Wii U this year, so they're pretty much probably just thinking that we can advertise that we have a new Mario game, and you can still kind of get away with advertising New Super Mario Bros. U again by advertising it with New Super Luigi U, and that's, you know, one of their major pushes going into the fall. It's like three new Mario games, and, you know, Wonderful 101, and Pikmin, and Zelda, and Donkey Kong, and all that other stuff. If it works, it's, you know, really up to them.
Yeah, and what I was going to say about Super Luigi U, also talking about the Nabbit thing, I don't know how far you are, but I only have 2 worlds left, and almost all of the challenge is pits and lava, so I think even with Nabbit, it'll still be hard. But yeah, that's why I like it, and I kind of like it better than New Super Mario Bros. U, because of the challenge. I'm not going to float, I am going to float my own boat, but I'm pretty good at Mario, and... and, like, this is amazing to me. Like, I love it so much. And I can't play New Super Mario Bros. U single player. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just boring to me. But it's a lot of fun playing it with other people. Like, and I love New Super Mario Bros. U.
I think what's going to happen, and I'm kind of curious to see if they do follow through with this, it would be an interesting strategy, is that they do still kind of want their everybody's games, you know, those. And I think that's great, and if they can offer a DLC like New Super Luigi U that ups the challenge in certain ways, while giving people a compelling reason to kind of play through the game, it is a novelty. I mean, this is a spoiler, but it's a Mario game, so whatever. I do know that once you beat the game, you unlock the ability to play with Mario physics.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Huh.
Okay.
So you get to go back through the game and see how it would play with normal, well, I guess, you know, the normal game physics and see if it still holds up that challenge.
That is interesting. And a pretty good idea.
Gives you another reason to play through it again.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. But like we were saying before, with Microsoft, Don Matrick, the former president of Entertainment, IEB? I don't really know what it stands for, but basically the Xbox brand, has left Microsoft to join Zynga because that's a promising career move.
Well, yeah.
Well, for him, was an upwards move because he went from the president of one division to the CEO of a company.
Yeah, and they're doing restructuring apparently at Microsoft as well. So Like, people are saying, and it's rumored that it was like, you know, Don Matrick wasn't going to get that role again. So it makes sense for him to go to Zynga, where he would be at a high position.
And despite what everyone might be thinking, he did not get fired, and he did not go away because of E3.
Yeah.
That this thing happened months before.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was even rumors that he might have taken a post as the new CEO of EA.
Yeah.
So, you know,
one thing I heard was, I don't know where, but apparently some people at EA were kind of pissed that he went to Zynga because they really wanted him.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is weird when you think about it. I mean, granted, I don't know enough about business to know what's traditional, but EA has been without a CEO for, what, 4 months now?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
That does seem kind of odd.
And Zynga's not in a great position as well, so this might be like a Jason Rubin sort of situation.
Yeah, I think one, he gets a lot of money. I think he's, what, 19 million?
I don't know.
Something like that, I think.
But, I mean, it's a great position to be in, because if Zynga collapses, it's not on him. It was a sinking ship when he came in.
Yeah.
And if he turns it around, oh, man, look at this guy. He's the one that can raise your stock.
Exactly. He can
the
lose.
The Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing Jason Rubin with. Because nobody blames Jason Rubin for THQ's failure. But if he had somehow miraculously found a way to turn it around, he would have been hailed as a hero.
Yeah.
It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, I am kind
Except
of curious.
Except for the company, but
yeah.
For...
I am kind of curious, though, because whatever reputation he has over this past year with gamers and stuff like that, he is responsible for the Xbox 360's amazing growth these past 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, granted, yeah, some of the decisions he made recently didn't really rub us the right way, but I'm kind of curious to see who takes over and if they continue with his policies or if they try something new, because, again, he's been successful, but it's still a kind of lose-lose situation with Microsoft, who make money off of the 360 brand now, but I think they're still in the red overall for the devices between the 360 and the original Xbox. And, what is it, they poured something like $1.5 billion into this new one?
I have no idea what the numbers are for that one, to be honest.
I know they said they support like $1 billion into the like game development, opening up studios and stuff like that. There was something, there was rumors like the NFL deal was something like $400 million.
Wow.
Well, NFL doesn't come cheap.
Yeah. I never have a context of like how devastating $400 million or whatever million is to like big companies. But
well, I mean, granted, to Microsoft it may not be a big deal. The thing is, if you can make it back, and that you know, I'm assuming that the 360, the Xbox One will do well overall. But is it going to be something that does well over? You know, like Microsoft, one of the reasons the 360 did well is because they prolonged this generation for 8 years. Like, is the next president going to give them 8 years to make it this viable system? I mean, it didn't even take off until 2010, really, and that was 5 years into the system's lifespan.
Yeah, they need a Satoru Iwata to come in and, like,
yeah, I don't know if you want to mention Iwata. Iwata's not the most...
No, I mean, like, when Iwata came in and saved Nintendo, like, with the Wii and the DS, and then all of a sudden they're like, billionaire.
Then it's also again the question, did he really save Nintendo, or is it whoever came up with the control scheme for the Wii U?
Yeah, but that was him under his regime. Like the old.
It was under his regime, but I doubt he's solely responsible for it.
It's one of those weird things, because any problem he's solely responsible for, any good doings, it was a company decision. And it's the same thing with Don Matrick. I assume Don Matrick wasn't the one guy who said, we're going to do this DRM thing, but he's the one, you know, you kind of put yourself out there as the president, as the figurehead of the company. And I was going to say with Iwata, I don't necessarily think, I mean, one, I don't think, I mean, I don't know if he saved Nintendo, because Nintendo has never really been in any grave danger so far.
Right, no, yeah, that's true.
Give them a new sense of relevancy in the industry that they haven't had in a while.
Exactly.
But Microsoft doesn't face that issue right now. We don't really know how the Xbox One's going to play out. So, you know, we don't know what they need to have shaken up yet, because we don't know if they're hurt yet.
Right.
Who is now in charge of Xbox? I think Ballmer is, right?
It's Ballmer, yeah.
Yeah, because that's going great for Windows.
Well, I assume that he is, you know, I assume it's probably business as usual. He's just kind of there as to say yes or no. He probably doesn't have any real sway in the day-to-day decision-making.
That's probably the best thing they can do.
Well, it depends, because, you know, and again, I have no business experience. I do have people experience, though. And sometimes a lead by committee doesn't work as well because you have several people with different agendas. So it's going to be weird. You know, because the people who run day-to-day or were the people who reported the metric, and if you have several people who are vying for that position, they may want to do what is best for them, but may screw over somebody else in the process.
Hmm.
We shall see. It's interesting. I think it was A4 Play who mentioned that, like, him doing this doesn't really show any hope, because they said that right now it means that Microsoft's the exit direction with the Xbox One. And I want to agree with that, because it feels like Microsoft has acted direction with this system since they revealed it. And now that you kind of have the visionary behind it getting off the boat before it launches, it just seems like now you're a ship in the water without a captain.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks bad. Though it is something that happened months in advance.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah, that reversal, though, man, this has been the craziest time for video games in a long time. Like, it is so dramatic and insane. Like, the ups and downs that has happened since, like, what, 6 months ago when the rumors started happening about the dystopian future, and now, like, it is insane. It has never been this insane for a long time. It's crazy.
I will say this much, though. That's both a blessing and a curse, because I feel like becomes a story nowadays, and it does kind of get old when everybody's stressing up the simplest things as this huge controversy. And yeah. I realize part of it is because we're in a very down period for the industry as far as news goes, but it just seeing, like, you know, like, stuff becomes stories, tweets become these huge ordeals. We mentioned last week about Bill Fish and Kevin Dent fighting over Twitter.
It does suck. Like, everything is clickbait now. Like, every game that comes out is going to be like, oh, is there racism in here? Is there sexism in here? And all this stupid stuff.
And the sad thing is, I do think it's a discussion that the industry needs to have. I think the industry needs to have a discussion on representation of minorities and women. I also think it needs to have a discussion on the level of violence that is on display at times. But what happens is, if you kind of parade it down with everything, it's a discussion nobody's going to take seriously because, oh, here we go again. And that's not the attitude to have, but it's an attitude people can develop, because it's like every little thing turns into a fight about equality, and it needs to happen, but you have to pick your battles. You can't pick your fight for everything, because if you take up a pitchfork for every little thing, you're going to find the S&S people behind you at the end. It's like the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah, exactly.
I know how that comes off, but I've had a lot of random discussions with people where I feel bad sometimes, because I honestly don't see it. And these people feel very passionate about it. I'm like, yeah, but if you feel passionate about it every time it comes up, I don't really know when I need to support you.
Right. Another thing that happened is, wait, are we done with this conversation, or?
Yeah, I mean, unless you have anything else to add to it.
Martin?
No, not really.
Another thing that happened is the whole Double Fine Kickstarter thing.
Oh, right, that was a thing.
Yeah.
I'm not really because as far as I know, they're not asking for more money.
No,
yeah,
what they are doing is they don't have enough money to finish Broken Age.
Yeah, they went way over budget,
mostly it's not the scale of the game, but that it's taking them longer than it was expected than the two.
So they're going to split it in half. And then the first half is going to come out.
The second half is in July. But I mean, it's
and then the what they're doing is doing basically the Steam early access thing, so people can basically buy into the first part, and people who backed on Kickstarter will still get their full game. It's a way to get more money to finish the game without going to any publisher.
Yeah, and you know, I understand. Like I said, I'm happy that they're not doing Kickstarter again. But it is really weird, and you know, granted, I assume game budgets aren't any stationary thing. You don't say, like, we're going to make something for 5 million and just kind of hit 5 million exactly, or you stop the game at that. You know, this happens in movies as well. People go over budget all the time.
Yeah, but they like only asked for like what, 450,000 or something.
Yeah, like, they did what is it, 8 times what they asked for, and they still went over budget. And
yeah, the thing is, if you followed them, because I backed them, I saw all the videos that they did up to now, and you could see that they, because of all the money they got, they were trying to do way more stuff than they originally planned for.
Like, it's a whole new game from what was originally
using conceived. Way more artists and stuff like that, and apparently it kind of spiraled out of control a bit. At least that's what it looked like.
And honestly, speaking, this sounds like
Double Fine.
Well, I was gonna say this sounds like the industry in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of what happens. It's like people have this great idea. Okay, we'll get these Hollywood voice actors. Okay, we'll get these really great artists. We'll get 100 engineers to do this. And it just, like, at some point, it just starts to spiral out of control. Eventually, you have to rein it in to kind of get the game out there. But it is kind of this thing where, like, at some point, you know, I understand that they had the money and it's great that they wanted to give people work. But you should have focused on doing what you wanted to do first and then started to expand on it instead of, like, this whole, okay, we got more money. Let's just try to be very ambitious now. And, you know, like, it's not, you know, like I said, I'm happy that they're not asking for money. People are still getting their game, even if it's a bit behind schedule.
Yeah. Yep.
Huh.
I wonder how, like, Naughty Dog does it without having any problems, apparently. Like, even Ken Levine has, like, massive delays and delays and delays. But Naughty Dog seems to be, like, having these high-budget games demanding a lot of effort and money.
Wasn't they asked of us delayed a couple of times?
It was delayed. It was delayed.
It really
once.
Delayed.
But yeah, it just was, like a couple of months it was delayed or something.
I thought it was supposed to. No, wait. When was it announced? Because I thought it was supposed to originally come out at the end of last year.
No, it wasn't. No, they didn't say a date as it was announced.
Okay.
I think it was supposed to come out, like, earlier this year.
I know it was delayed from May to June, which isn't a big deal, but I feel like it was also in March at one point. But I know it's been delayed. I feel like Uncharted is just like you. Uncharted 2 and 3, I think, worked out just because they already had an engine in place.
Yeah, yeah.
You have the actors, you have the characters, so that's easy. And also, Sony seems to give their developers a lot more leeway with development, which, you know, we've mentioned before, is a good and bad thing, because you get the Last Guardian, for example, or you get Gran Turismo 5.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean...
But yeah, back on the Kickstarter thing, I think, personally, that's a huge bummer that worked out like that. I didn't back it, but, Martin, you said you backed it. What do you think about how
I backed it, and I'm actually not that bothered by it, but by whatever reason, because I kind of know how the games business works, and before I even backed it, even though it's an established developer, I knew that the risk was always there that they might go over budget or something else might not work out. It's the risk you have to take. If you're not willing to take it, don't kickstart something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and it was, to be fair, this is also one of the earlier Kickstarters where everybody went Kickstarter happy.
Yeah.
And I've also backed this project. I honestly, you know, it's not a huge deal. I backed it because I wanted to see this game supported. It's not a big deal. It's not like I'm going to be starved for games anytime soon.
Yeah.
I honestly.
And personally, I'm actually more excited now because for me at this point, I think I'm kind of don't even care that much about the game, but I'm kind of having more fun with the videos they produce about the production of the game. And if the last episode is any indication, the next ones should be kind of fun because of all the turmoil. So that's always good for documentation.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. And, you know, Kickstarter is use at your own discretion. It's your money. You decide to part with it. And I also want to say that, and this is something that I hate, and, you know, I've always kind of supported people complaining. I think it's a great thing to do. That's the best way to do it as a consumer. But make sure you're a consumer. If you didn't back the game, you say, and you go on ranting about it, like, this is why I didn't back the game, you don't really have a right in this discussion because you're not being wronged in any fashion.
Yep. And even the backers are not getting wrong. They're not asking more money from you. It's just going to take a bit longer, and they are basically letting more people get early access to the game. That's all.
So there you go.
It's not the worst thing in the world.
Okay. So, yeah, we are pretty much done. But I did have some... I got one question on Tumblr that I answered this week, and I'm just going to pose it to you two. And I think it's a very interesting question, if it's... phrase correctly in my head, but
can we,
I was.
Can we make this a segment on the podcast, like questions from social networks? Social networks?
We have it as a function, but we don't always do it because we don't always get questions.
Right. Okay.
I mean, I actually do have a stockpile of questions that I've saved up over, but we always the last couple of times we've been running along. But yeah, this one was from, I forget who, I don't know, it was an anonymous person. There we go. And it was basically, what does video games mean to you?
Wow. Oh my god.
Yeah, I sat on this question for about 5 days in my inbox trying to think about it. And since I already kind of have a pre-arranged answer, I shall go first and then think about it. And I still don't really know how to phrase it. I did it, like I said, it was a tough question to answer. It's still a tough question to answer. But I tell you what I walked away with is that video games to me is kind of the ultimate form of escape. I mean, more than any other entertainment medium that I enjoy, movies, comic books, television, whatever, video games offers a chance to kind of go beyond that. It offers you a chance to be anything you want to be at any time you want to be. You know, I can be a plumber saving a princess for God knows what reason. I can be a space marine walking through armor. I can be myself. I can be an ideal form of myself. I can be the hero. I can be the villain. I can be, you know, I can be a background player. I can be the guy who's, you know, guarding the chosen one of destiny. And it just offers so many options, so many worlds, so many great characters and places to visit. And a lot of games, especially some of my favorite games, don't have to confine by any rules that other mediums do. Like, there's no reason that you have a, you know, like Super Mario Galaxy, for example, has stages built out of a toy box or a train or a candy end. And it makes no sense rationally, but you take it for what it is because it's always there. It's allowed in that gamey object to be there because why not? It fits in the theme like anything else. And personally speaking, it's the one thing that drives me more than anything else in games is finding something magical and different around every corner. It's one of the reasons why, and I've always defended this game, even though I know it's easy as hell. Kirby's Epic Yarn is one of my favorite games of all time. The game has no challenge whatsoever if you know how to move a controller, but the game is charming and magical and wonderful, and every time you finish a level, something new and different happens. I mean, on the not just in the stages, but on the world map, it unfurls, it unravels, and it's always something, a dragon or a magical door or a spaceship, and you never know what to expect. And that drove me more than anything to continue playing the game, because I wanted to see what would happen next. And I think that was the epitome of what gaming is for me. I'm always driven by the excitement of what's going to happen next. And to me, those are the best games, are the ones that can continue to kind of captivate my imagination in, you know, 5 hours, in 20 hours. In this case, it's, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles, 100 hours after I started it.
Yeah, that's well said. And yeah, I completely agree with a lot of that. Gaming to me, it's the ultimate form of escape, but it's also the ultimate form of entertainment in general. And I'm very, very passionate about all media, literature, music, movies, film. But games are like the ultimate form of everything with that combined. Like, you have your artists, you have music in there, you get to control the game, you have all these elements in the game that no other medium has. And it provides so much variety, more than any other medium. And you get to immerse yourself in it because you control the character. And I even think that those movie games like Heavy Rain or, God, I forget the, or Dear Esther, was just like a game that you don't really play, even those, and
the
people
Walking
say,
Dead.
Even those, and people say, you know, hey, like, I'm not going to play because it's just like a movie, this isn't a game. But even the movie games, it's different than a movie because I'm playing it. And that fact alone is what makes it better for me. Like, even if I'm just walking around this universe, it's me walking around that universe. And even though I'm not doing anything and I'm being controlled by a scripted movie sequence, it's still better than a movie to me because, like, I'm controlling it. I'm looking at what I want to look at. I'm choosing a dialogue option that I want to choose. And that's what makes it a lot more special. And of course, you know, gameplay, like, so much variety on different gameplays you get. It's just, it's a wonderful medium, and, like, I've loved it since I can remember. Like, it's my oldest, everything, I've gone through a lot of phases, but video games have never been a phase that I've ever broke out of. And it meant so much to me since I was a child, and still now as an adult. So.
Okay. Martin?
That's difficult. I guess it's for me two things. On one hand, it's for me, video games are probably a huge part of who I am because I started gaming pretty early. I mean, today it's not something that special, but I started gaming when I was 6 years old. Today gaming is everywhere, but back then it wasn't something that common. So when I was 6 years old, with a Game Boy, and games kind of informed a lot of what I enjoy in media and what I find interesting when it comes to be it mechanics in games, be it scenarios. I don't know, my love for huge robots, my stuff like that. It informed a lot of who I am. And on the other hand, it's, for me, it's not, I wouldn't really call it escapism, but it's, more just, I would more just call it, doing stuff or using my brain in ways that I just wouldn't do in my normal life, let's call it. I would never spend any thoughts on, how my personal dynasty what will be, but I can in a game and care about who I don't know my half brother marries and if maybe I should kill my wife and stuff like that, or I just can use my brain for way different tasks, which is kind of interesting and kind of take my mind off normal, more ordinary, for more ordinary tasks, and that also kind of often just refreshes my batteries in a way, and for these more ordinary tasks, at least for me.
Okay.
So many games, like not the movie games, but a lot of other games, like, gives you skill, you know, hand-eye coordination is the big one, but, like, you get good at all these games. It also gives you the skill of learning information very fast and being able to utilize that information on a game-to-game basis. And then just, like, forgetting the information from this game and learning some more rules very quickly and being like, okay, I got it. And... yeah, it just, I don't know, it has, like, every element of every medium in there already, and you can just take advantage of that. I think it's as good as any other medium.
It does some stuff better, it does some stuff worse. I mean, it's still an immature medium. I will say this much, and I've always been passionate about this.
One thing Phil just mentioned is something I also enjoy, but that gaming kind of always... at least it depends on how many different games you play and how many games you play, I guess. But for me, gaming also always is a learning experience. And that's kind of a good thing. It keeps me on my feet, so to speak, because every game is kind of different in some ways, maybe if you haven't played something. So you always have to learn and adapt to things and analyze how different stuff works together, which is also something that can be helpful in your daily life, to be able to analyze how different components work with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was going to say this, and like I said, this is something I've been passionate about. I've always kind of been adamant about stating this, and I know it's not for everybody. It's that I never define myself by being a gamer. I always hate when people do that. As much as I enjoy it, it's not who I am. I don't call myself a gamer. I play them. And I think that's one thing that I think a lot of people do have issues with, is defining themselves by their hobbies and not by who they are. And so, yeah, as much as I love gaming, it's not the only it's not me. So I have other hobbies, I have other interests beyond this, and it's just one of my
games. Oh yeah,
that is not what I meant earlier. I meant more that it informs.
I didn't mean
a lot of things I enjoy.
I didn't mean you in general. I just meant that, you know, like, I think me and Joe mentioned, you know, a form of escapism, and I don't want to say I don't, you know, it's not necessarily the escapism from life, because life does suck at times, but you have to deal with it. Just, you know, like, I play gaming for enjoyment. I don't play it for anything beyond. Any medium I consume is for enjoyment, it's for entertainment. And sometimes I feel like that's not necessary with other people seeing it, because a lot of people end this, and I don't want to end on this down note, because it's one of those things. I think, like, one of the big pushes we've seen in this generation, especially in the last two or three years, has been this kind of push to be taken seriously, to be seen as a mature medium. And I feel like sometimes it gets lost in the shuffle that gaming can just be a diversion. It can just be simple fun for people. It doesn't need to be, you know, it doesn't need to be seen as the same as movies or books or anything like that to be a great medium for people to engage and enjoy.
Game studies.
Okay, you're all talking over each other.
Yeah. There was some kind of lag. Phil,
okay.
You first.
I do take games seriously, but not as serious as, like, I'm going out boycotting and writing angry, you know, posts on the internet and comparing games to movies and anything like that. Nothing like that extreme, but I do, like, it's more than just, like, a simple, you know, fun thing for me. I do take it seriously in the fact that it's been a huge part of my life. But yeah, it's not the only part of my life. Like, I have a degree in radio broadcasting. I have, like, my mind is set on different career paths, and I like other types of media, music. I'm very passionate about music. I've been in bands, and, you know, like, things like that. I like the outdoors, camping, whatever. It's not, like, the only facet of my personality, but it is very, very huge to me, and I take it seriously to, like, a degree, you know? I don't know. It's hard to explain, but, like, it's more than just, like, a hobby, but it's not, like, I'm going crazy trying to spread the word about it or anything like that. I'm like,
spread the holy gospel of video games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
What I wanted to add to, I guess, you know, both of you is, for people who still think that games are not being taken seriously, as someone who is, who studies media studies and does a lot of stuff with games, at least in the academic circles, games are being treated pretty seriously.
Well, I think games are being treated seriously for a lot of people. It's just not the people who feel like it has not arrived, because we kind of mentioned this, I think, before on the show. But as of right now, gaming is being played by more people than ever before. It's being played by hundreds of millions of people across the world. It's just not necessarily the type of games that people want to showcase. It's the Angry Birds, your Candy Crush Sagas, your Words with Friends. But those are still games. It's not, you know, like, people want stuff like The Last of Us and The Walking Dead to sell 20 million copies to show that people are taking this as a serious storytelling medium. And it doesn't need to be. It can be its own thing, and it does a terrific job of being its own thing. It offers experiences and control that no other medium does. And I think, I mean, for me personally, that's why I've always kind of preferred games that you played and not necessarily stuff like Heavy Rain, where it's kind of like you're kind of a guide on this experience that you kind of get to interact with at certain key junctures. I know, it's, you know, it depends on the person. Some people love it, some people don't. It's whatever. I'm happy that those experiences exist. I'm happy that those people get those type of experiences. But it's not the only way for an industry to mature and to be taken seriously. So yeah, I think that's it for this question. So yeah, as we mentioned, as Phil mentioned, if you want, you can send in questions. We have, usually on the show notes, we have a Twitter, Do World In, Facebook, Do World In. We have an ask.fm, but I honestly don't ever check that, so whatever. But yeah, I want to thank Phil and Martin. This has been Do World episode 115.
Yeah, it's Dewey. And I'm not wasted, but I'm gaming all night and all day. You dig?
Gamer lifestyle, so games is what I'm playing. Game on that 6-4, so you know I say gaming. Game, hop on live, then you know I start raping. Game, wake up in the morning, turn on the PlayStation. Game, playing, playing, playing till my game start breaking. Game, I'm a damn nerd, so boys stop hating. Game, I'm still gaming. Game, she's still gaming. Game, y'all still gaming, so games is what I'm playing. Don't test me, yeah, you know I'm going pro. You say you play football, I play Halo. I'm gaming all night, and you know I'm about to play. I bought a new game, so I'm skipping class today. I don't have a life, so I'm not going to hell. I got a game over, damn, FML. Super Mario, then Mega Man 3. On that 6-4, what the OOT. Putting in cheat, so I'm trying to get by. That way, when I play, I will never ever die. I smashed the D-pad and used the joystick. And when it comes to game, you know I'm on it. Gamer lifestyle, so games is what I'm playing. Game on that 6-4, so you know I stay gaming. Game my phone live, then you know I start raping. Game wake up in the morning, turn on the PlayStation. Game playing, playing, playing till my game start breaking. Game I'm a damn nerd, so boys stop hating. Game I'm still gaming. Game she's still gaming. Game we all still gaming, so games is what we playing. Sonic, Mario, Kingdom Hearts, GTA, Bully, Call of Duty, Bioshock, there's more to play. Guitar Hero, Rock Band, Tetris, Spider-Man, Donkey Kong, Gears of War, Mortal Kombat, Madden, R.E., Metroid, SF, Halo, Pikmin, Fable, Bomberman, Battletoads, Bloodbird, Diablo, Battleship, Dark Cloud, Pac-Man, God of War, and now we playing WoW. I gotta say WoW, cause I'm playing WoW. I love all my games, so it's my lifestyle. You wanna run games, cause games is what I run. Hey, why you play games? I think they're hella fun. Hey, gamer lifestyle, so games is what I'm playing. Game, on that 6-4, so you know I stay gaming. Game, my phone live, then you know I start raping. Game, wake up in the morning, turn on the PlayStation. Game, playing, playing, playing till my game start breaking. Game, I'm a damn nerd, so boys stop hating. Game, I'm still gaming. Game, she's still gaming. Game, y'all still gaming, so games is what we playing. Yeah, it's Dewey, and we gaming, not getting wasted. By the way, don't be trying to steal my songs either, 'cause you know it's Ooh-wee!